Thank you for attending session 363 titled Faith, Food, Culture, and Science. Please silence your cell phones and please be respectful during the presentation and during the Q&A portion. This session is being recorded and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk. We hope that you will also support the Mormon artists and vendors on Handcrafters Row outside in the corridor. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask that both audience and presenters keep within the framework of that time so we can allow the next session to start on time. As a courtesy to other presenters and our attendees, we ask that immediately after this session you clear the room and speak outside so that other presentations can begin, can begin preparation for the next session. About this presentation, LDS members tend to put their primary focus on the word of wisdom when discussing nutrition in the church community. In doing so, we may be missing the bigger impact that our faith can have on our dietary behaviors and overall health. But what happens when current science doesn't uphold revelation? How do we best care for our health, and why would God care about our lunch? Zach is a registered dietitian nutritionist with experience in one-on-one nutrition counseling, presenting for employee wellness efforts, and teaching as a college professor. He currently hosts Latter-day Saint Nutritionist podcast, where he mixes food, faith, principles, culture, and science, and the science behind health claims. Zach earned his bachelor's degree in human nutrition from the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, his Master's of Community Nutrition from the University of Massachusetts, and his performed clinical internship at Yale New Haven Hospital. And now for the presentation.
All right, so as a professor, I am not used to standing behind a pulpit and talking at people. I like wander around. So this might be a little different for me if I wander, just like start motioning me back over to it, okay? Also, this is not going to be me just like talking at you for the next hour. I hope you're okay with that. You're going to have to think. You're probably going to have to write. You might have to talk to your neighbor. And if that gives you some bit of anxiety, just know that it's coming and prep yourself for it, okay? So to just jump right into it, we're going to talk about cars. So how many of you have ever been in a car before? How many of you have ever driven a car before? Okay, it looks like most of you. How many of you have ever been in a car where you were driving and you sped? You surpassed the speed limit that is legally there. Okay, why did you do that? Why did you speed? So I want you to think about it for a second, talk to your neighbor. I'll give you like 7 seconds to discuss this. So why do you speed? All right, so now that you've had some time to think about it, why is it that you speed? Just go ahead and yell it out. I'll repeat it in the microphone so whoever's listening will be able to hear it. Why do you speed? Yeah.
Because I can.
Because you can, right? Okay. Anybody else?
Get there,
to get there faster, right? You don't want to be the person that's late. Understood. Anything else?
I'm impatient.
You're impatient, right? Because if you could get there faster, why not? Anybody in competition with the GPS where you're like, that's a game and I will win? Okay. Anybody raised that way where like your parents told you that you could go 5 to 7 over and that's okay, the cops can't stop you at that point? Yeah, okay. So there's a lot of different reasons why people will speed. And I understand like this has nothing to do with nutrition, but it will. So let's just hold on for just a second. All right. But it might be safer to go the speed of traffic. Has anybody ever been going like a little bit under and feel like it's not safe because people are flying around you, right? So it could be a safety measure to do all those things. But these are like the common reasons why people would speed. But reflect on this behavior. None of these behaviors or none of the reasons why you are speeding have anything to do with someone else pushing your foot on that pedal to the floor. Like it is all your choice to do those things, right? But there are other external influences that encourage you to speed or to go the speed limit, okay? So we are influenced by many different things, many different just influencers within our own lives, within our community, within our society, that are going to influence how we drive, but also influence how we are going to behave. Not just in the car, but in, maybe in front of a plate or whenever we go out to eat. And we'll get into that in just a second. But this is called the socio-ecological model. And this is something that is dietitians and is anybody that's really in the field of behavior change, you're going to use to help people to get from one situation to the next. And also to understand that the whole thing with their diet, the reason they weigh what they weigh, the reason they're unhealthy is not just because they don't have money. Or it's not just because their parents never taught them how to cook. Or it's not just because any number of things. There are countless number of influencers that are going to shape why you behave the way you do. So, the reasons that we speed, I could easily change this title to the reasons that we are unhealthy. It's, we get there faster. We don't have as much time, right? You have the lead foot or you're just excited about doing this, right? You always go on vacation and you always go and get that strawberry daiquiri from that one place and it's virgin, but it's still a strawberry daiquiri, right? And so we have these things that are going to influence how we behave. So the socio-ecological model says that we're influenced on many different levels, and it's going to depend on who we are, how we were raised, and what we internalized, and how we see ourselves in the world. Now, when we talk about food and faith, oftentimes it's limited within the LDS community to Doctrine and Covenants 89, right? We talk about the five don'ts, and we'll talk about those in a minute. Or we talk about how whenever you say a prayer, you pray that that food will strengthen and nourish your bodies, even if it's a donut or a cake. But it's been blessed, so it's going to strengthen and nourish you, right? But there's a lot of different things that we do within our faith culture, or even within our doctrine, that can influence how we are going to see food, how we see our own selves, and how we can use those doctrines, those cultural behaviors, those environmental behaviors or influencers to help us to establish a more healthier version of ourselves. Now, whenever I say culture, a lot of times people just think of ethnicity. But culture is not limited to the color of our skin, but it's a matter of where we're born. If you were born in the South, that's different than being born in the North. If you're born outside of the U.S., that's different than being born in Iowa, right? So wherever you are from, that is going to shape how it is that you see food. And I'll go through a couple of different scenarios in this, and I'll ask some questions. And some of you might know some of these foods, and some of you will think that I'm making this up, okay? But these are real things, okay? But it comes down to the behaviors that we foster. So if there's a one-off comment that was said to us whenever we're 4 years old, and we've internalized that, and that's how we see ourselves because your mother told you that you need to grow up and not out, then that can influence how you see food or how you see yourself. If we're told that you're going to go to hell if you drink a caffeinated beverage, then that might influence how you see food or how you approach different dietary items. Now, she already gave a little bit about me, but just to let you guys know, I host a podcast talking about food and faith. So if you feel like there is something that I did not discuss here that I should have gone in more detail on, check out the podcast or let me know, because I will talk about this until the cows come home because this is my jam, all right? But this is also how I approach food, because as a son, as a brother, as a member of the church, as a husband, as a father, you know, all of those things are going to influence how we eat. Now, did anybody in here grow up in a member of the Clean Plate Club? Okay, does anybody not know what the Clean Plate Club is? So the Clean Plate Club is like, if you do not eat the food that is on your plate, then a child that is in Africa or in China or in Kazakhstan or wherever you would like to choose is going to die because they're starving to death and you didn't eat your food. So you have to eat everything on your food on your plate, or you're going to save it for breakfast in the morning, right? The other one is general conference treats. Like, there are specific foods that you would eat at specific times of the year. Another one is meat and potatoes, where if you don't have meat at a meal, it's not a meal. All of these things shape how we see the world. And whenever you start to make changes, that's when you start to realize that, oh, I'm a meat and potato person. Because whenever there's not meat and potatoes, you're like, okay, well, then where's my meal? I know I just ate, but that was like the appetizer to the meal, okay? But those things influence us. Those shape our thoughts. They shape our behaviors. One of my favorites is you have people that run, and that's what they do. Like, they are runners. They exercise, and they have their group of friends. They get together. They go run together. If they don't show up for a certain run, their friends call them, and they haze them, and they're like, oh, you're getting chubby on us, right? But then you also have the other side of it where you have the people that don't run, and that's what they do. And if they start to run, their friends are like, oh, we're trying to get all healthy on us, Karen. Okay, I see how this is going. But there's these social constructs that influence what it is that you're going to do. In our society, in the United States, most people do not eat horse because they're pretty. And not necessarily that it's illegal, but it's just not normal to go out and like buy a horse burger from your local grocery store. Okay? The other one would be is that people would say, and I've seen this on t-shirts too, where it says, if you see me running, look behind me because you should start too, because I don't run. It's not something that I enjoy doing. But there's the environmental influencers, where we are raised. So first off, anybody had fat back before? And I'm talking fat back the food, not fat back like fat on your back. Has anybody eaten fat back before? Okay? So if you've never heard of it, fat back is something that is like the fattiest cut of bacon you could ever think of that you would use to cook with your collard greens or your black-eyed peas to give it seasoning. Poke bowls, green jello, all right, biscuits and gravy, fish and chips, crickets. I had a couple of people that had crickets, okay. All right, what about hummus? Fufu. Anybody had fufu before? Tacos. It's kind of across the board. It's a new one, but it's there. Sushi, quinoa. And has anybody in here, just curious, you've had horse? Okay, where did you have horse from?
Tongans eat horse all the time.
Okay, right.
All the time.
But have you had it here?
Yep.
Where do you get it from?
Tongans have horse.
Oh, okay. So you have your sources. That's fine. All right. Yeah, so in Europe, that's a commonplace thing. But in the U.S., not too often. So this is a point where you can blend two cultures together. So you can have the Tongan heritage and the Tongan culture where that is a normal staple food, but with your other friends, they're like, what is this? Okay? So other environmental influences are your neighborhood, the city ordinances. Do they allow for neighborhood gardens? Do they allow you to grow food on your front porch? Or do you have to allow that only to be like you can have two plants? There's different rules that are out there. Or national laws, your work environment, do you have a microwave, do you have a fridge? All of those things influence what you do. One of the cool things is that there's this thing called blue zones. So blue zones are locations around the world where people are more likely to live to be 100 years old. And it's because they have cultural, environmental behaviors, and just familial influences that encourage them to have a culture of health. So they eat healthy foods, they move all the time, they develop friendships, they have a culture of faith, and they are connected in that way. Now, we're having a cultural shift, though, because of the internet. We're more connected than we ever have been in the past. So there's more information that's available. There are more opportunities to try different food. I was speaking with some people before this session about sushi. And about how 10 years ago, in order to eat sushi, you had to go to a fancy restaurant and pay a lot of money for it. Now you just run down to your local grocery store and you can buy it for $7, right? And like anybody can have sushi. The other thing is that within the LDS culture, a lot of the young men and young women will go on missions and they'll try new foods and like, oh, mole. I love mole. I'm going to go back to where I'm from. I'm going to go back to Ohio or North Carolina or Connecticut and figure out where I can buy mole. Whereas no one in their family has ever had that before. And so you're blending cultures again. Now, as part of this exercise, I want you guys to think, what are some things within the LDS culture or doctrine that will influence what we do dietarily? Okay, and I'll give you, I want this to be serious, in-depth conversation and thought processes, so I'll give you like 17 seconds. So what is it that we do culturally, doctrinally, environmentally, that are going to influence our diet? All right, I see some wheels turning. What do you guys think of? What comes to mind? Yeah. Yes. So you have the ward ice cream night, or before priesthood session, they're going to have pizza and pie, right? Okay, so that would be one.
So delicious.
And why so delicious?
It's,
right. So whether it is, if it's carbonated, it's not coffee, it's not tea, but it is a vice that we can choose. Okay? Yeah.
At least, so I think the word wisdom does influence some people to eat more fruits and vegetables. Certainly, we teach the primary thing of God.
Right. So the doctrine of the word of wisdom is like a very blatant one that we can see that says we shouldn't consume certain things, and then we should consume others. Whether we focus on what we should consume or what we should not do is a different thing, right? Anything else? Here's some for you, okay? So family size. In the past, LDS families had typically had a lot of children, okay? And so growing up in a family where there's a lot of children, you typically do not take your time at meals and eat mindfully. You don't think, how is this pleasing to the palate? Do I like the smells? Do I like the texture? It's, no, I need to eat this before my brothers show up or I'm not going to get any. Okay, and that can stick with you throughout your entire lifetime until you're in your mid-40s and you're like, why do I eat so fast, right? The other one is that you potentially breastfeeding. It might be cheaper. You don't have to buy formula for all these kids. All of that can be part of it. Education level, and not just in terms of food and nutrition, but just in terms of going to college, having access to more income. Those can all be influencers over what we do. Another one is a two-parent household. Because you have two parents in that household, you have one that can focus on providing the food, one that can focus on preparing the food. There's different opportunities that are available to you because of that. The other one, we talked briefly about like the ice cream nights, but family home evening. Every Monday night, you got to have a sweet treat because of family home evening, right? It's not necessarily that you're just going to have like peaches or you're going to have watermelon, but it's like, what blondie brownie concoction can I come up with tonight? The other one is food storage. So with food storage, we're going to use our staple food items, whether that's rice or pasta or the dehydrated banana chips, because that's what our kids take into school in his lunchbox, because we got to cycle through this. It's going bad. But all of those things influence what we do. So there's the cultural side, there's the environmental side, there's the doctrinal side. In the doctrine side, we have the word of wisdom. And within the word of wisdom, there are the five don'ts. We don't smoke, we don't drink coffee, we don't drink tea, we don't do illegal drugs, and we don't drink alcohol, right? But there's a lot of things that we are supposed to do that we aren't necessarily focusing on when we talk about the word of wisdom. So grains are good. Plants, fruits and vegetables, those are beneficial. Meat should be consumed sparingly. Maybe we don't pay attention to those things, but oftentimes within the church, they look at all of these things with prudence and thanksgiving, and we're like, we can do that. I'm going to pray before every meal, and I say thank you, right? But in consuming a healthy diet, a lot of times we focus on what we're not doing, and we say, well, I'm not drinking that. I'm not smoking that. I'm not eating this. But we don't necessarily focus on, but I am eating these things. And if we continue on within the doctrine, we believe that we are created in the image of God. And if we believe that we're created in the image of God and that our bodies are temples, then there are certain ways that we feel like we should treat our bodies. We believe in eternity. We believe in receiving a perfected and resurrected body. And that being the case, how we treat our body within mortality is important. One of the things that I focus on whenever I speak with people within the church is that we are created in the image of God. And if we have a perfected body, or we have a body that is in the image of deity, then we should appreciate the body that we've been given rather than be at war with it. There's a lot of body shaming that goes on. There's a lot of self-hatred that occurs because we don't look the certain way we should. Maybe we don't have the Dorito cut, or we don't have the six-pack, or we're not as curvy as we should be in certain places. But if we believe that we're created in the image of God, then we should appreciate the body that we've been given. Continuing on doctrinally, we have the atonement. With the atonement that was suffered by Christ, we have the ability to break through boxes that we can put ourselves in or that we feel we are put in by society, right? We just think, well, this is just the way that I am. I can't change, and this is me. You need to accept me as me. But if we believe that through Christ we can overcome all things and that with Christ we can do all things, then we don't have to be limited to what we were. Rather, we can see what we can become. And that's something that we can use in our dietary behaviors too. A lot of people have the mentality that they don't like healthy foods because healthy foods taste bad. And that's not always the case, but if you have that mentality, then you're not going to try healthy foods because you think they all taste bad. You're like, I'm not eating bark for the rest of my life. And that's fine. But that mentality is something that we can change. Continuing with the atonement, there is the enabling power of the atonement. It's not just about overcoming sin and shortcomings, but it's empowering you and enabling you to become better than you have been. If you don't think that you can run a 5K, you won't sign up for a 5K. If you don't hope that you could run a marathon, you don't go out and do training runs. So those principles of faith and hope can also be tied into our dietary choices. If you don't believe that you could be healthy, then you're not going to try to be healthy. So continuing on, we'll move into the cultural side of things. So we believe that parents should be co-parents. They both should be able to teach children, not just about the doctrine, but we can use that in terms of health as well, and teaching them to be healthy. Men and husbands and fathers are notoriously bad, and the research shows this. They're not doing a good job at teaching their kids to eat healthy foods. They're really good at encouraging them to exercise. And they'll go out and play sports with them, and they'll teach them how to throw, and they'll teach them how to catch, and they'll teach them how to swim, and they'll teach them how to hit people when they play football. But when it comes to making healthy food choices, men typically have the mentality that, well, I can lose weight really fast, so I don't need to worry about it. Whereas women are the ones that are going to be the primary food purchasers and preparers within the home. And so they may focus on healthy food choices. But when it comes back to it, if the husband brings home some pizza, it's going to override the healthier choices that mom is presenting. So having that united front in providing healthy food options can be important. Also, we think that sitting down with family and having those family ties is important. And in doing that, you can establish what is healthy. And it's not just about being thin. We also believe in agency and the ability to choose. One of my favorites is whenever you approach a child, you can give them two choices. You say, would you like an apple and peanut butter? Would you like celery and peanut butter with raisins? And the child says, oh, I want the apple and peanut butter. And you're like, sweet. They think they got to choose. And they did. But you had constructed it in a way that either way they chose, they were choosing something healthy and you're okay with it. Right? So, yes, they are exercising their agency, but you are encouraging them to make healthy choices regardless. Food storage, again, cultural. We have chore charts as members of the church, often because you have a lot of kids and you need to keep them busy. Otherwise, they're going to start to get frustrated because they are bored and they have nothing to do. And you're like, I have a long list of things that you can do, right? But you can use that same mentality and that same organization to encourage your kids to like participate in the meal planning. Do we want to have Taco Tuesdays? Do we want to have Meatless Mondays? Do we want to say that every Friday night is pizza night and we make our own pizzas? Those are all things that we can do. But going back to our bodies and being created in the image of God, there are a couple of movements within the health community of body positivity and health at every size. Now, body positivity is that regardless of what your body looks like, you should be okay with it. Not that you love it, that there's no faults with it, that it could never do any wrong, but you appreciate it and you are thankful for it. And body positivity isn't just for larger individuals, okay? Because there are plenty of anorexic individuals that are uncomfortable with how their body looks. I don't care who you talk to. The majority of the women you ask if they want to lose weight, they'll say, yeah, 5 or 10 pounds. Even if they're at a normal weight. Even if their weight is fine, you might ask them, where would you lose it from? They'll be like, oh, you know, I'll grab a little part of their body and say, this is where it could go, right? But with body positivity and health at every size, the mentality is that you appreciate your body and that regardless of where you are in your weight, regardless of where you are in terms of chronic illnesses, you are willing to take steps to be healthy. You don't have to wait to lose 10 pounds to purchase that gym membership. You don't have to prove to yourself that you're willing to be healthy for 2 weeks before you can really start to look at healthier food items, right? So these are doctrinal things that we can just glean from the gospel and understand and apply to our dietary behaviors or our health behaviors. This isn't just limited to what you eat, but it's the behaviors that you have as well. Within the church, we focus a lot on service and selflessness. And oftentimes, people will, to the detriment of their own health, serve other people or look beyond themselves and say, well, I'm not worrying about myself because I have to worry about these people. I need to make sure that my kids are okay, so I'm not going to go exercise. I got to make sure that my sister is fine or these people that are moving in are okay, so I don't have time to cook a meal tonight. And I'm not saying stop serving or stop helping other people or stop being kind. But that selflessness could be something that we look at whenever we're deciding what is influencing us and our health. There was a pastor who gave the example that whenever he was planning funerals for members of his congregation, he would plan the funerals, he would plan the event afterwards where you would sit there and tell good stories about Brother John and how you knew him and he did this and it was just an excellent experience for you. But then you look at the food and the food there is nothing that's healthy. And so this pastor made the comment, we are here just planning our next funeral. Because literally we have a food that is called funeral potatoes. Now whether that's because it's supposed to be eating at funerals or it's causing funerals, that's a different conversation. But there are certain foods that we have that because we're selfless and serving, like it's okay to have these things. But you could use that service and selflessness to encourage health too. Whether you're having a linger longer and you stop having soda there. When I was the elders quorum president, they would have linger longers and they would ask who would sign up for what thing. And I would always sign up for drinks because water is free and it's at the building already. And they're like, no, really, are you bringing soda? And I'm like, no, really, I'm not, because no one's going to miss it if we don't have it. And water is okay to drink, right? But also you could teach young men and young women how to cook. And I say young men and young women, not just young women, because men need to know how to cook too. Okay? But these are simple things that culturally we could do, and doctrinally they influence us. Okay? But it comes back to self. So those things, those three items that I've been mentioning, all influence how we behave personally. So if we go back to the socio-ecological model, you go from policy, community, organizational, interpersonal, all to individual. It all comes back to what does the individual do and what do they believe and how do they behave. So again, that comes back to education level, financial ability or financial stability, skill level in the kitchen, whether they know how to cook or not, because they can watch the Food Network all they want. But if they don't know how to chop onions, it does not matter how much they would like to make a quiche, right? So like they need to understand that skills are tied to those things. And if they don't have the skills, then understanding how to make healthier choices might be a little bit more difficult. Whether they have access or the mental or emotional health to be able to take care of themselves. Some people are not, even though they have the knowledge, they have the skills, at certain times in your life, things can get a little overwhelming. Things can get a little all up in the air. And so if you're living at someone else's house, no matter how good of a cook you are, if you don't have access to the food or the utensils that you know how to use, then you're not making healthy food items. And that kind of goes in terms with Maslow's laws of hierarchy. So one of the things that you can consider is, who are you? How do you see yourself? And so again, just as part of the mental exercise where you are participating in this, I want you to think of at least two things that define who you are and what your character is. And I'll give you another 10 seconds to think through this. So how would you explain yourself to someone else? Anybody willing to share? Anybody a prepper? Anybody a rancher, a gardener? Any of those things? You have a farm? Okay. So would you consider yourself a farmer? Would that be one of the first like character traits or like defining points you would give for yourself?
Yes, it's a small farm, but I do farm.
But it's important to you. Okay. Anybody else? Yeah. You're a nature lover. And that would be like one of the sticking points on your Tinder profile that I am a nature lover. Okay? That's fine. Mutual, Bumble, however we want to do it. Anybody else?
Whole food, plant-based.
Whole food, plant-based. And that would be like one of your defining criteria of who you are. Okay? So when we go to the scriptures, it talks about as a man thinketh, so is he. So how does that apply to us doctrinally? So if you look at this and you think through the process of, I know Jed, so I'm going to use his name. Jed being a farmer, right? That's going to shape how he eats because he understands how things grow. He understands what you would need to do to nurture those plants. It might help him to have a little bit more gratitude for the food that he eats because he knows where it comes from. The nature lover, I'm not sure your name, would maybe something where you appreciate the ability and the creation that has gone into the process of all of these things. The whole food, plant-based individual. Again, those are going to shape the foods that we eat. Okay? But if you think that you're too poor to eat healthy, then you're not going to try to eat healthy. And that's what the research shows. Like, whenever you have those college kids, they're like, oh, I'm all poor and I don't have any money, so I must eat ramen. That's the staple for college kids. They don't have to eat ramen. But the mentality and the culture and the environment of the friends that they're with, that might be what they're doing. Or, I have diabetes, so I can't eat sugar. Or, I'm thin, so I don't need to exercise. I've had students literally tell me that. And if we, again, see ourselves in certain ways, that affects how we approach our own healthy habits. So, Elder Holland gave the talk that we need to be ye therefore perfect someday. So it's about progress, it's not about perfection. Within the LDS community, there can be a lot of pressure to be perfect. And that being the case, if the only thing that you can control, because you can't control your kids, they're crazy, you can't control your job because you have to have income and maybe you have limited education, you can't control any number of things, but you could control the food that goes into your body. Like, then that can lead to disordered eating habits. But if we think of perfection as being thin, then we may engage in unhealthy eating habits to accomplish that. What I propose and what the gospel teaches is that it's about direction, not speed. It's about progress, not about established perfection here in mortality. This gives us the permission to continue to learn, to continue to grow, to continue to try and fail and try and fail. And again, in our health, these are things that we need to do. A lot of times people will try diets, and they'll try it for 30 days, but day 31 comes, and they go back to their old habits. But if they're in the eternal scheme of things trying to learn more, rather than just trying to get an outcome, then they're going to be perfected themselves. Now, oftentimes we'll talk through things, and the tone that we use can also influence us. So who in here has Numbers 13, 26 through 33 memorized, and they'd be willing to quote it for me? Nobody? Okay, yeah. So I will summarize it for you. This is whenever Moses has led the children of Israel out of Egypt, and they go into, they're outside the promised land. Moses sends in 12 spies, and 10 of them come back, and they say, oh, so everything that the Lord told us about this land is true. Like, the milk and honey is awesome, the grapes are huge, but the dudes are gigantic and they're going to destroy us. So there's no way that we can take over this promised land. And all that they said, those were the facts, right? But there were two other spies, and the two other spies says, yes, those are the facts. They are bigger. The milk and honey is awesome. The grapes are huge. It's going to be great. But the Lord has promised us this land. And so while the 10 gave the report that was the facts, it wasn't necessarily the truth, because if they were speaking in faith, they would understand that the Lord would provide a way for them to take the land that they were promised. And oftentimes, whenever we speak, we might be speaking with the facts. I'm 15 pounds overweight. I don't exercise. There's no way that I would be able to do this. But the truth is that we can do all things through Christ. The truth is that you are a son or daughter of God. The truth is that you have this body that is a gift that is working to keep you alive, sometimes in spite of who you are and what you do to it. And that is the truth. But we can get caught up in the facts and not look at the higher principles of it. Now, the other part of this talk is talking about how the science sometimes might not match up with what the doctrine encourages us to do. Okay? And for this, I'm specifically going to go into the word of wisdom and the research that's there. So the research on smoking tobacco is don't. Like that's just out there. We know that smoking tobacco is not good, so we're good there, right? The word of wisdom, spot on. The research on illegal drugs is, for the most part, don't. Unless we're able to put it into a pharmaceutical form that we can use that is going to be controllable and we can better understand how it will interact with the human body. Okay? So again, that one's pretty good. Research on meat consumption, consume it sparingly, that's still spot on. I mean, there are other diets that will come out that are fad diets that will tell you otherwise that may or may not be healthy for you in the long run, but there's a media person pushing it, so people will try it. But the research shows that meat should be consumed sparingly, which, again, in the word of wisdom, excellent. Research on coffee is mixed, okay? There are people that will publish articles that will show that it can be heart healthy. There are other research articles that can say that it can be damaging, but it's a mixed bag, so why not avoid it? Next, we'll go into green tea. This is where it starts to get interesting because green tea is actually in the research. It shows that it is favorable. It can be healthy. It can be beneficial for your heart. There are a lot of phytonutrients and phytochemicals, which are just plant nutrients or chemicals that are beneficial for helping you to sustain your body processes. So that one is where we may start to deviate. Research on alcohol in moderation, and this is specifically to red wine, it's favorable that red wine can be heart healthy. There are, again, phytonutrients, phytochemicals. There's resveratrol in red wine that can be heart healthy, but you don't have to get it from red wine. You could drink grape juice, or you could eat other plants that are going to have that nutrient in it. Research on caffeine, while it's not in the word of wisdom, some individuals and some families and some communities will say that this is not okay. The research on caffeine says that during pregnancy and in younger ages, it should be avoided because it can cause developmental issues. So again, that might be beneficial to look out for. And then the research on alcohol cooking out of foods. So the reality is that a lot of people will cook with alcohol, but they won't drink alcohol because we're not supposed to drink it. But cooking with it, it cooks out. The research actually shows that the higher the temperature, the longer you cook it, yes, it will cook out. But if you're just going to sear it in some Jim Beam, you're still getting the alcohol that's coming from that. Okay? So the research backs up the majority of the word of wisdom. Obviously, the research, we are still learning more and more. We'll continue to learn. But what do you do whenever green tea is healthy for you, but it's asked by our leaders not to consume? And the reality is that there comes a point where we have faith that we are going to take a step. And this isn't blind faith. This isn't saying, well, someday we'll find out that it's bad for you. Because that's what I find is that people will within the church will quote the research that says coffee is bad for you and that caffeine is bad for you and use it to say it's proof of the word of wisdom. But that's not what the research is supposed to do. If we believe that that revelation is there, and if we believe that that is something that the Lord has asked us to do, sometimes you do things because you're asked not to, or you're asked to do them or asked not to do them. And it's a personal choice. Because within the gospel, we have agency. And it comes down to, the Lord and Joseph Smith did not go through and list Bang energy drinks. He did not list Red Bull. He did not list that you could not have Jim Beam beer battered shrimp. Like there's not a list of all the foods that you can or cannot have because we are not meant to be slothful servants. We're not meant to be commanded in all things. We're meant to be able to think and make decisions for ourselves. And so it comes down to, do we decide to follow that green tea has been asked to not be consumed or not. You can do whatever you like because, again, you have agency. But the point of this presentation is that just like with that speeding car, we're influenced by any number of things. And the church and the gospel and the doctrines and the culture are all just some of those things that build up who you are and how you behave. So when you look at the culture of it, it's important to recognize that you are a sum of all of the experiences that you've had in this life, the people that you know, the places that you've lived, the beliefs that you hold. And so the last question I ask is, therefore, what? How has faith, or how will you use faith to influence your health behaviors? Will you use the skills that you have in organization and taking care of a household of five to help you to be organized in your dietary choices by making a food list whenever you go grocery shopping and meal planning or meal prepping, things like that? Will you use faith to allow yourself to take steps forward and believe that you can be healthy? Because believe it or not, some people think that they just can't be healthy. They're destined to be sick. They're destined to be unhealthy. But if we believe that we can do all things through Christ and we can overcome things and in the enabling power of the atonement, then we have the opportunity to grow and develop and become. The other one, gardening, praying over meals, expressing gratitude, and truly thinking about where that food is coming from and what a miracle it is that we have those things. So those are some of the things that I wanted to discuss today. I know we have time for Q&A, but if you would like to stay in touch, there are opportunities to do that through social media, through podcasts, through books. But I will turn the time over to any questions that you guys may have. And I'll ask, they want us to use the microphone when asking questions because they're recording the sessions.
Thanks. Great message. What about eating meat sparingly? The Word of Wisdom says we should eat meat sparingly. What do you think that means? And to me, it means we shouldn't eat very much meat. And if that's a correct interpretation, why do we not follow that in the church?
That is an excellent question. One, it is easy. Okay, first, as a dietitian, we'll go in this revenue. Most people overconsume protein that they need. And in our society, it's easy because we have access to a lot of meat. Okay? The amount that most people need would be about the size of their hand for the day. And that would be the amount of protein that they need. However, if you're growing up in a society where you are meat and potatoes, then meat is half of what you consume and potatoes are the other half. Okay? The other thing is that it can, from the economical side of things, show that you are able to provide for your family because you have the finances to purchase meat. Because meat is expensive. If you've ever looked at your grocery bill, the cost of meat can dwarf any of the other foods that you're purchasing. And so you're not asked about it in a Temple Recommend interview. You're not necessarily bringing in a dietary report whenever you say that you're following the Word of Wisdom. And we have access to a lot of meat in our society. It can be in anything. We can get it in our stir fries. We can get it through the drive-thru. We can get it at your grandmother's house because she has that famous pot roast, right? It's tradition of being like we're growing the food storage. We're using all of those things. But it's not something that is asked about. It's not something that's harped upon. It's not something that's reported. So it's... No one is really asking you to stop.
Can I follow up?
Yeah, go for it.
I think we should eat less meat.
I agree.
I'm glad to hear you agree. It would be better for our health and the health of the planet if we had a plant-based, plant-focused diet in the church, and I hope we can encourage that to be the case.
I completely agree. There is a lot of research behind plant-based and the benefits of consuming more plants, whether that is because you love the environment and you realize that 2/3 of the world's food supply is being consumed by animals that we then eat, or whether you just want to have a garden and grow your own food and save some money.
And water. Animals consume a huge amount more water than eating plants does. Another reason that a lot of people use the amount of meat that they do is, I think is that it's an easy and convenient way to get a lot of taste,
yes.
a lot of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And until you learn how to cook well with vegetables and get flavor that way, it's still actually more work to cook vegetables. It's just better.
Yeah, I would agree with that. What I usually tell people is rather than having meat be the major portion of your meal, use meat as seasoning. Because if you use steak in your stir fry, you don't have to have a lot of steak to get the stir fry to have the steak taste. Right? Because the aromas that are going to be there, you're still going to get that sensation of having meat. Yes?
I think it's not so much that we have to entirely eliminate meat, but if we even just went back to the way our more immediate ancestors used meat, which was because it was expensive, so they ate it less often, they ate less of it, and they used the whole animal to, and you know,
right.
like you made broth from the bones that were left over at the end, and you used that to flavor your food, and we're not doing that.
Right. Now. And it comes back to, sometimes we only think about what we are doing and what we're not doing. So if you're going to consume more plants, then you're going to get full, so you're going to consume less meat. And so if you frame it that we need to eat less meat, a lot of people are like, I'm not giving up my steak. I love fried chicken. Chick-fil-A, have you had that? It's delicious, right? But if you frame it as we need to eat more vegetables, then as a side effect of eating more vegetables, you will eat less meat. So I think those are two things that you can do, right? But it's just a matter of how you look at it.
So a member of my immediate family is evangelizing for intermittent fasting.
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts
because
on that?
Because food has become a religion.
It is. So can you have different thoughts about that?
Are you asking if it is healthy, if it is researched, what would you like to know?
Like, yeah. What's the research on it?
Okay. So the research is that it can be helpful. And it depends on which method you're thinking of, whether you're thinking you only eat between certain hours of the day, or you eat a reduced amount for 3 or 4 days a week, and then 3 days a week you eat the appropriate amount. Okay. So with the hours one, it can show that it's beneficial. It can help with weight loss, and a lot of time it's because it's adding structure to what people are doing. And so they say, well, the kitchen is open between 8 and 6, and that's it. And then after that, I'm not going to eat anything. So if you're a mindless eater, meaning that like whenever you get home from work, you plop down in front of the TV and you're like, okay, give me all my dinner, and then I'm going to go back and get the bag of chips later, and then I'm going to go get the ice cream before I go to bed, then that structure of 8 to 6 can be helpful. The issues with it is that it may not be sustainable. So if you're going on vacation, do you change your hours? If you work third shift or you work second shift, do you change your hours? And so it's a little bit harder to keep that same structure whenever life changes all the time. So it could become a fad diet that people follow. It can be helpful, though. The other downfall of it is that if you have the mentality of I can only eat between 8 and 6, then at 9:52, whenever you're hungry again, you start planning for 8 o'clock the next morning. And you're like, okay, well, when I can eat again, you best bet I'm going to crush this Captain Crunch, right? And they eat the whole bag of Captain Crunch rather than just a normal size,
right?
Because they're still fixated on food. So
right, food
it
size.
Can be helpful. It depends on the individual, and it depends on how they're going to do it and if it's sustainable.
Another thing is, my sense is that a lot of the research into it has been done with men as subjects, and
that's a good question.
May not translate.
Well, you have to understand that if you've ever tried to lose weight with your spouse, one of you gets really frustrated. Okay, and it's typically the woman because men can lose weight faster than women can, because we have different body builds. And so I'm glad that you made that point. I don't know right offhand the structure of those studies and if it was primarily men or not. But if it is, yes, men do lose weight faster.
What do you make of the injunctions in the Word of Wisdom about doing things with our own hands, that we do stuff that we're not outsourcing our food preparation to somebody else, but that we do things on our own?
I think that's an excellent choice. By the sweat of their own brow shall they eat bread, right? I mean, that's the scripture. And so if we have an active role in the food that we're consuming, we know what it is that we're eating. No matter how often you go to different restaurants and you choose from their healthy menu or their low fare options or their low calorie options, it's never going to be as healthy as you think it should, because the sodium in those things is through the roof. The amount of fat that is in them might be a little bit lower because they're not adding as much butter to your burger when they cook it, but it's not going to match your definition of health. So not only is it going to be healthier, but you are developing yourself as an individual and being able to have the skills to cook things and make things and have those memories with other family members. So if you create the culture that Monday night we go to Applebee's, Tuesday night we go to Steak and Shake, Wednesday night we go to IHOP, and that's the culture that you foster in your family, that's what's passed on to your children. Unless your children make the choice to change, right? And so it's not just about that individual cooking things, and it's not just about the food being healthier at home, because you can make some pretty bad stuff at home too, right? You can make your own deep-fried Oreos at home. But you're not as likely to, and it takes more work than it does going up to the kiosk and asking them for an order of 14. Yeah.
There's just a hunch I've always had that when you prepare things on your own, you tend to eat less of it versus if you're outsourcing it. I don't know if you've
that's typically
any
correct.
Research.
Okay. Yeah, and so what will happen is whenever you are cooking food, you are mentally eating the entire time because you're smelling it. You have gone through the process of preparing all of it. And so whenever you get to the table, you're already like mentally eating. Does that make sense? Because eating is not just what you put in your mouth. It's a complete sensual experience. What you smell, the textures of it, you know, the environment that you're in. One of my favorite studies that they came out with is I'll go ahead and say it. We got it. We got a minute. They had this restaurant where they didn't have any food on the table. There were no utensils. There was no drinks. There was nothing. There was just a little cow, okay? And everybody's seated. Nobody knows what these cows are about. One person finally picks up the cow and looks at it, and when they pick it up, the cow moos. So people start laughing, and everybody else at their tables picks up the cow, and it moos. And so at this point, once the cow is picked up, it moos. People laugh. The food is brought out. Because everybody's in a good mood, the food is going to taste better. Same thing happens when people go on vacation. They go on these vacations, they consume this red wine for their 35th wedding anniversary, and they think, this is the best red wine that I've ever had in my life. But part of it is they're on the vineyard where the wine was made, and this is their dream trip to Italy. You know, so they're there, they're doing all these things, and they buy a bottle, and they bring it home so they can drink it on their 36th wedding anniversary, and they do. And on the 36th wedding anniversary, they think, this is rancid, this is not good. They must have given me a fake bottle. But it's the same bottle, it's a different environment. So you can make things taste better or good based on a lot of different things, but it's all of your senses are a part of it. So yes, cooking at home is not just about like what you make, but it's that you make. Yeah.
One of the slides you had, I think, something about teaching how to cook.
Yes.
And is that going on in your ward? And
So in some wards, one of the things that they'll do is a fundraiser, actually, where the kids have to cook a meal, and parents will come in, the couples will come in, and they will pay they'll pay the fee for that meal. The kids are babysat, and that way the parents or the students, the young men and young women, are there preparing foods. More often than not, it's the young women that are making food, right? As a whole. But in that scenario, and that's been in a couple of different wards that I've used or been in, it's been the young men and young women doing that. We have to step away from the idea that women are the only ones that cook. And I think that's just a cultural thing that you have to step beyond. And you have to take an active role in it whenever it happens in your ward to say, no, the men aren't just setting up the tables and putting out the silverware and refilling drinks. Like, the men are going to cook too.
The ward recently has come out with self-reliance courses,
education,
yes. Getting your own job, starting your own business, personal finances. Is there preparing your own meals?
I would love it. I don't know. I'm not privy to that information. But those classes in and of themselves are amazing. I think that if there was something for health, I would love to be a part of it. I would love to encourage that to happen. Because we as a culture, and I was talking to some people earlier, we spend more money on food now than in the history people have. Right? Because there's people that will spend $700, $800 on groceries a month, and that's like rent for an apartment. But the mentality that we have is we're living to experience. And so people will go on vacation to eat certain foods. They want to have that rainbow donut. They want to have North Carolina barbecue. They want to have like kingfish, or like whatever it is. They go on vacations to have food. And going back to your comment earlier, food is becoming its own type of religion. If you've ever tried to talk to somebody that's keto and tell them not to do it, it's impossible.
I'm from Portland.
Yes. Okay. So,
but the back to the preparation and who's benefiting from the classes. So I used to be the enrichment leader in my ward, mm-hmm. and my Relief Society president asked if we could have something at one of our meetings that was going to teach the people who are receiving food assistance in the ward how to cook from scratch. And I prepared a wonderful demonstration with three different easy recipes, starting with chicken thighs and onions, right? Uh-huh. Really basic, great building blocks. And the people who needed to learn this stuff didn't come to that class.
Well, and it's not just the individuals that are getting church assistance that would need that. Because with those staples, with flour and sugar, you can make cookies and you can make donuts or you can make whole wheat bread. Right, so it's like a matter of what we're going to do with the ingredients that we've been given, along with the skills that we have to do those things. But yeah, I mean, it comes back to agency and choice.
Can't make them choose the right thing.
You cannot force people to choose things, yeah. My job would be a lot easier if you could. Probably non-existent if I could, but. I mean, isn't that the plan that we chose not to do?
You know, but I do think that I know you mentioned about finances and exercise being choices, but you know, there are people that can't afford to eat the same kinds of foods that other people can, and there are people that can't afford to spend the same amount of time in the kitchen that other people can. And so, you know, when I hear that, it sounds very classist to me.
I would agree completely.
That to just assume that everybody is unwilling to do things because they don't.
Right. No, and I'm sorry if that is how my comments have come across, because I completely agree. I, in this presentation, did not bring those things up, because it can be a luxury in some rights, but again, going back to the idea that I'm too poor to be healthy, a lot of times and the research shows, if we have that mentality, you will not try to be healthy. And while it can be difficult, the other issue that, again, we didn't go into depth on, but if you want to talk, I'm more than happy to, the marketing and advertising that goes into foods is partially destroying the health of our nation. Because in order to be healthy, you have to have organic and non-GMO foods. But I can't afford to buy a $9 bunch of blueberries because they have anthocyanins in them, and they're high, and they're superfoods, and they're like a great source of nutrients. But that would be my meal, is blueberries, and that's one meal. And if I'm trying to be healthy and I have to buy the non-GMO or the organic versions of foods all the time, oftentimes people won't do it. And so whenever I talk to individuals, I'll typically say, I would rather you eat a non-organic banana than not eat bananas because you can't afford an organic banana. There's a lot of research behind eating plant foods. The research isn't as strong that it has to be organic, but the media tells you you do. And that's where like the wires gets crossed. So I completely agree with you that those comments may have come across that way, and I apologize.
Yeah, the main benefit of eating organic is not you, it's the planet.
Well,
I mean,
Potentially.
It's not documented that eating a lot of organic food is going to make that much difference to your health, but it's going to make a lot of difference to whether the plants can sustain themselves and the fields can sustain themselves and things like that.
And there may even be some arguments against that. Okay. With some of the research, it may be more difficult to produce food for a growing population. Ah. And the pesticides that are used in organic situations, sometimes you have to use more pesticides because they're natural. They're not as strong. So you're using more things on your food than you would if you just use a synthetic version of it. But, I mean, I'm not saying don't eat organic. I'm saying that it can be overblown. And, yes, it could be healthy for the planet.
I heard somebody on the radio, like, thinking he was disproving the value of eating organic by saying that there's no nutritional difference that's measurable. And I thought that's a bogus argument.
Sure. And the other thing is that some people just want things that you don't have to use synthetic chemicals to use to get your food.
Right.
It's the same thing with the Impossible Burger. It may be just as bad for you as a regular hamburger, but it's cruelty-free. Right. So you're not killing any animals to get it, but it's not healthy for you, but you're not killing any animals to get it. And if that's what your focus is not killing animals or not having to raise animals, then okay. Right, so there's a lot of different reasons why people do what they do, hence the presentation. Yeah. Thank you.